Depression is our leading cause of disability here in Canada. We are 100 times more likely to be depressed today than we were 100 years ago. It's costing our economy billions of dollars every single year, and unfortunately about 70% of the people struggling with depression are not finding help. They're suffering in silence. About 70% of the people struggling with depression suffer in silence. They can't find help for their disability, and if they do find help, unfortunately, it's drugs, and the drugs actually can cause more harm than good.
I've had phone calls, I've had email from listeners who say, you know, Pam, Colleen really bugs me sometime, but what bugs me even more is the more I look around, I see more evidence that what she's saying is absolutely right. Just in the last few days, more evidence that what Pam's, to me, her key phrase is, we're sicker, we're fatter, and we're more depressed than ever. Just look at the reports that we have seen in the last couple of days. A survey that which found that 44% of Canadian employees have dealt with mental health issues at some point, 12% stating that they are right now experiencing mental health conditions. That's over 1 in 10. Mental health issues, as defined for the survey, considered a wide variety of conditions, including depression, addictions, and substance abuse, bipolar disorder, anxiety, and excessive stress, among others. And if that report wasn't depressing enough, also a new report about obesity. What's going on out there, Pam Colleen?
Well, we have a bad mood epidemic going on out there. We have people who simply, you know, barely get through the day and are non-functioning mentally or emotionally. And I don't think that Mother Nature messed up that badly. I mean, after 2.6 million years of evolution, how could we possibly have arrived at this point where we are such a mentally unstable and physically unhealthy culture?
Give us a snapshot of London, Ontario, when it comes to the issue of mental issues.
Well, let's just take a look at the spectrum of things here. We see on the bottom end of the scale, we see our children, and they have trouble getting out of bed in the morning. They're being diagnosed with ADD, ADHD, probably about 10% or more. In total, of course, our children over their childhood are going to be, about 20% of them are going to be diagnosed with a mental disorder. 20% of them. And then when you go to the other end of the spectrum, of course, what are we seeing? We're seeing dementia, we're seeing Alzheimer's, we're seeing Parkinson's disease. So, we see this mental breakdown in society today. And unfortunately, what is happening is, talk therapy is great. Medications may be helpful, for short-term uses. But unfortunately, the research isn't really supporting the fact that, for example, antidepressants are working. In fact, even the industry states that for 2 out of 3 people, antidepressants aren't working. So we have to be we have to look for other solutions. And what is being ignored is the nutritional component that, essentially our nervous systems run on certain nutrients. And we are just simply not getting these nutrients today in our diet.
Instead of putting gas in the tank to make the engine run, we're putting in some other kind of fluid, which isn't doing the job. And there is this notion that for every illness, there's a pill, mm-hmm. there's a needle, there's a vaccine. But these two, this nasty combination of that you keep referring to about obesity, just on the obesity issue, according to the report, 1/4 of adults and about 9% of children ages 6 to 17 in Canada are now obese. I mean, in a country that is as blessed as we are to be in this mess, in the opening clip that I played off the top, you referred to depression and the depression rates today compared mm-hmm. to a century ago?
Right. We're about 100 times more likely to have a mental disorder today than we were 100 years ago. And so what I do in my classes and in my book is I talk about the changes that have gone on in our diet over the last 100 years that have led to what I call brain starvation, that we are literally starving our brains of some very key nutrients that stabilize our moods.
Like?
Well, I mean, the long-chain fatty acids that you would find in things like meat and butter. DHA, another long-chain fatty acid that you would also find in these foods, and even in wild fish, which is why a lot of people, when they are potentially dealing with depression, will eat more fish or take fish oil supplements, for example, in order to get that particular long-chain fatty acid. We're not getting enough choline in our diets. We're not getting enough of the fat-soluble vitamins A and D, which are crucial for your nervous system. And so what we've seen over the last 100 years is a reduction, a very sharp reduction in our consumption of these nutrients.
It's all about what goes in your mouth.
Absolutely. There's no, our head is not disconnected from the rest of our bodies. You know, when you swallow a pill, whether it's Prozac or what have you, it goes into your stomach and it affects your brain. That's no different than food. When you eat food, it goes into your stomach and it affects your brain. And unfortunately, this is the disconnect. This is not what's being recognized in traditional therapies.
Why are we not getting it? If it's so true and it's so obvious and people like you keep hammering away on this, why are we still looking for a chemical solution to all of these?
Well,
issues?
You know, there's a lot of money behind, you know, selling a lot of these drugs. And they have a tremendous amount of influence over our governments. The lobbyists, of course, don't like what I say. So they'll be the ones that are going to be complaining and sending in angry emails and saying, you know, that I don't know what I'm talking about or that I'm anti-progress or what have you. The universities are simply not going to get funding from local farmers who are supplying a lot of these nutrient-dense foods. They're going to be getting money from big pharma, big agra, what have you. So, you know, we're the little guy. My voice is the little voice out there. You know, they're not going to acknowledge or embrace what I'm saying simply because they can make so much money by constantly selling drugs to people and getting them hooked from cradle to grave. And, you know, infectious diseases isn't big money today. Chronic illness is big money because they can sell drugs for decades on end. And that's very, very profitable.
And it seems like almost daily we get another report about another health crisis in this country. And folks, you know, I'm not making this stuff up. I'm just looking at clippings in the Toronto Star and the Globe and Mail and the half a dozen other newspapers that I go through. Let's just grab one here in the National Post. Pam, you'll find this one interesting. Rush to emulate Western culture blamed for rise in obesity in Chinese children. Let me just read a couple of paragraphs. China's spoiled generation of single children is rapidly becoming overweight, while their parents are also growing obese faster than any other country apart from Mexico. There's been a 25% rise in obesity in Shanghai's elementary school children over the past decade, 13% overweight, and almost half of those who are obese. Of those also obese. Why? Well, they're adopting Western eating habits.
That's right, because we have been increasing our consumption of plant-based foods over the last 100 years. And by increasing our consumption of plant-based foods, of course, what that has done is destabilized our biochemistry, destabilized our nervous systems. And this makes sense in from the standpoint of economics, agricultural economics. It's easier to feed millions of people in small geographic areas plant-based foods. Animal foods are a nuisance to produce. Plant-based foods are much easier to produce. They're easier to ship. They have better shelf life. They're more profitable than animal foods. And since this shift in our diet, of course, what this has done is nothing but damage to the human body because, of course, we evolved on eating higher quality animal foods. We weren't fat phobic. We weren't cholesterol phobic, egg phobic, meat phobic, liver. We didn't have food phobias 100 years ago. You know, we ate these foods readily. We knew that they were good for us. They knew they sustained the human body. And unfortunately, due to a lot of misinformation over the last 100 years, we have steered away from those traditional nutrient-dense foods.
We have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to ask you this question. You must get so frustrated having the answers to some of these very difficult issues. What would be one dramatic form in which if you were to say, give me a chance to prove that what I'm saying is right. Give me one employer, one large employer with 500 workers who have all these mental issues, up to half of the workers, mm-hmm. the thing that you would, the challenge that you would throw out there to that employer that would prove over a period, and obviously would take some time, that a lot of these issues of depression and mental illness and obesity and on and on and on it goes, which are threatening to bankrupt this province and this country, have a fairly simple solution. The lines are open, 643-1290. If you want to weigh in on what Pam Killeen is saying, she's not only savvy and brave and fearless, but she's a big girl and she can take whatever you want to say to her in terms of reaction to what she's saying, because we need to grapple with what she's saying because we are on a course which we simply can't sustain. If we keep eating the way we are, we keep living the way we are, we're going to bankrupt ourselves not too much longer after Greece does it. We'll be back with that in just a moment here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Depression is our leading cause of disability here in Canada. We are 100 times more likely to be depressed today than we were 100 years ago. It's costing our economy billions of dollars every single year, and unfortunately about 70% of the people struggling with depression are not finding help. They're suffering in silence. About 70% of the people struggling with depression suffer in silence. They can't find help for their disability, and if they do find help, unfortunately, it's drugs, and the drugs actually can cause more harm than good.
Pam Killeen in studio this morning saying we have huge, huge health issues, and the answer is not drugs, but nutrition. Let's deal with one item. You have a book signing this weekend, which people... And I encourage people to do this. If they think you're full of malarkey, go and talk to Pam at these book signings and look you in the eye.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't have the horns that they imagine you do, and the scars and the crooked teeth. I mean, you're not an evil person. You just want people to get better. And you yourself have been there.
Oh, I was disabled for 12 years. I was deathly, deathly ill for 12 years. I went from doctor to doctor, test to test. You know, I had one foot in the grave, and I was told I was healthy via all these tests. So, the people who come to me are extremely frustrated. They have been doing the same thing I did, running around in circles, going from doctor to doctor, naturopath to naturopath, drug to drug, and getting worse, spending lots of money and time and not getting anywhere.
Let's look at a couple of specific examples of this totally warped notion we have of how there's a pill for everything and a chemical solution, when the answer is probably more related to what's on our dinner plate. You saw a poster about energy at Western.
Oh, my goodness. I was in shock. I was up on campus the other day, and I saw a poster that said, you know, for energy, eat more fruits, vegetables, and grains. And this is just terrible advice. If you want more energy, eat more meat and liver and eggs and butter. These are the foods that are going to give you energy. Humans are fat burners. We're not sugar burners. And so by eating all of those carbohydrates or plant-based foods, basically, they're going to actually destabilize your biochemistry. They're not going to support your biochemistry. If anything, they're going to give you a buzz, a short-lived buzz, and that might feel like energy, but unfortunately, in the end, it's going to cause more fatigue or potential depression, sleep problems, and so on. You know, I work with a lot of people who take that advice literally, where eating grains and fruits and vegetables, they believe to be good, that they believe that these foods are good for them. And these are the vegetarians or near vegetarians that I work with all the time, and they are extremely tired, extremely depressed, mood disordered, have sleep problems.
Yourself call yourself a recovering vegetarian. What amazes me is these stories you have every time you come in of people in Quebec and California who have tried all the chemical solutions, are not getting results when it comes to fighting all kinds of various disorders, and then they gravitate to the kind of thinking that you certainly spell out in your book, Addictions, the Hidden Epidemic. Give us a couple of examples of people you're working with and the disorders that they're fighting.
Oh, my goodness. I see tragic, tragic cases of people who can't get out of bed in the morning. You know, these are 20-year-old men, 30-year-old men, have a terrible depression, no libido. They really just cannot function during the day. And they've experimented with vegetarian diets, which invariably made them worse. And then when I get them on animal fats, when I get them to start eating 3 square meals a day, the way we ate before World War II, when we weren't fat phobic, they start to feel better. They instantly the energy from the fat actually starts to stabilize them, and they start to feel that their lights are starting to come on again. And when people come to my classes, even if they're not working with me one-on-one, they come to my classes and they start to eat more animal fat in their diet. They generally come back to me and report that they're feeling better, that they're sleeping better, that their moods are better, and so on. So it's cause and effect. I see this all the time. And if people have trouble digesting fats, I know it's because they have problems with their digestion. Their digestion just lost the knowledge of being able to digest these foods. So, you know, we have to do some things with certain people to help turn on their digestion again.
Your book, Addiction, The Hidden Epidemic. Let's look at the two key words, addiction. Addiction to what and on what scale?
Well, addiction is basically, you know, it's our number one health problem if you look at the area of substance abuse. Substance abuse is causing more deaths and disability than any other cause. It's bigger than cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and so on. You know, in Canada, substance abuse alone is costing our economy about $40 billion every year. In the United States, it's costing the U.S. economy about $500 billion every year. This is a huge, huge problem. And I mentioned earlier that, you know, depression is our leading cause of disability here in Canada, and depression is basically the leading risk factor for developing any kind of addiction. So what we want to do in order to minimize our gravitation towards any kind of addiction is we want to be in a good mood, and we want to feel joy, happiness, motivation naturally. We shouldn't have to rely on a drug. And as I said earlier, you know, 2.6 million years of evolution, how could Mother Nature have screwed up so badly as to put us in this bad mood epidemic? It's just not natural. It's very, very new to mankind. And drugs are obviously not the entire answer. They may be a stopgap measure for certain individuals who are really, really struggling mentally, but you need to embrace the nutritional component. And unfortunately, Andy, I have to tell you, this is rather discouraging, is when I have people come to me and they've gone to their doctors and said, you know, I'm feeling lousy. Is it diet? Is it my diet? Could that have anything to do with why I feel so lousy? And you know what? The doctor patronizes and makes fun of the idea. They totally disregard nutrition as playing a role. And that, to me, I mean, this is the 21st century, folks. You know, they should not be talking so irresponsibly. They need to learn nutrition. And the solution lies in the medical schools. I teach the work of Dr. Weston A. Price. His book is the seminal book on nutrition. It's called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. And his book used to be taught in the medical schools. And it's sound advice. It's extremely sound advice. Unfortunately, you know, the doctors are not being taught nutrition. And if they are being taught nutrition, it's this low-fat message, which is very destructive.
Okay, help me with the links in the chain. Poor eating habits lead to physical disorder, which lead to depression, which lead to this bad mood epidemic that you're talking about, which lead to drugs, either legal or otherwise, prescription or otherwise, mm-hmm. which are both sort of the cause of all so many of the problems we have in society, whether it's the police budget in London, which we can't keep up. And Murray Faulkner, before he retired, said mental illness is the number one issue.
Mm-hmm.
It also relates to the other major problem we pointed out in a study this week, obesity. So you mm-hmm. got this two-headed monster of obesity and mental illness in its various forms.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because all these carbohydrates, all these plant-based foods, you know, we had Gary Taubes on the show, and he very eloquently describes this in his book, Why We Get Fat. Carbohydrates drive insulin. Insulin drives fat. It's not fat that makes us fat. Fat actually stabilizes your endocrine system. So, you know, we're being totally misinformed, and this misinformation started after World War II in the 1950s, where a theory, you know, arose that animal fat and cholesterol caused heart disease, and then it was blamed for obesity. And unfortunately, that has been, you know, that type of information is repeated over and over and over again in the scientific community, and people actually believe it, but it's never been proven.
Time for one real quick call. Alan, you're going to have to be brief.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Just a real quick one, and everything Pam says is very credible. And the one thing I think you missed, though, with 100 years, you never bring faith into it. Like, less and less people are in the churches now. They had more to lean on when we're talking depression, and they're not as much now.
That's a really interesting point, Alan. When I work with people and they are feeling so numb, they're feeling so tired, they're feeling so depressed, they can't have a spiritual connection. It's impossible. And when their biochemistry starts to come back, then they feel the joy, then they feel the spiritual connection. So, you know, I have people who come to me and they say, I can't pray anymore. I don't feel close to anybody, even God. You know, they don't have the physical connectiveness. And so essentially what you have to fix first is the physical. You have to fix the biochemical, and that in turn will help you.
Alan, we're out of time. Very quickly, you have mm-hmm. a book signing this weekend.
Yeah, I'll be at Chapters North off of Fanshawe Park Road on Saturday afternoon from 1 to 5 p.m.
And your website?
It's pamkilleen.com.
Folks, Pam, that's the thing that impresses me so much about her. She's always throwing all this research at me, but also she absolutely welcomes your feedback, your conversation, and even the opportunity to meet her personally to talk about her very controversial, but darn it, time after time, she proves how right her theories are. Pam Killeen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Andy.
Hands on the wheel, eyes on the road. Please hang up and drive so you arrive alive, and you can have a great day, and we can chat tomorrow morning, Friday, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.